Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Peter Schiff. Welcome to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market update. I'm Peter Schiff. I've been hosting this show now for almost 6 years. It'll be 6 years in January. We've been doing it live. You can hear it on the corporate website, europac.net, EUROPAC.net. You can also hear the show on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz, every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. I am taking your calls live, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Now, before we proceed with this week's show, let me make an announcement. I mentioned last week on the show that Wall Street Unspun was coming to an end, and I thought that maybe today's episode would be the final episode. Well, it's not. The final episode is 2 weeks from today, will be the last Wall Street Unspun. Next week, I will not be here. I am going to be out of the country on business in the Caribbean. Mike Pinto will be setting in as guest host. He is our chief economist. You might know Mike Pinto. He's on the Kudlow Show quite a bit and some other CNBCs, and he's been writing a lot of commentary up on our website. He's going to be hosting next week's show while I'm out of the country. Then I will be back 2 weeks from today for the last Wall Street Unspun. And I was just talking to Jason Cooper there, who helps me, or Jason with the show. And, you know, we've been doing it a while, and he's done a great job. I know a couple of times I've gotten frustrated, but overall we've had a pretty good experience doing this little radio show every Wednesday. I know we've built up a pretty good audience, but now we need to expand the audience quite a bit. So what is going to be happening is I will be doing a daily radio show. The first show is going to be Monday, October 18th. Monday, October 18th. For those of you who are listening on the internet, you will be able to listen at shiftradio.com. My last name, shiftradio.com. That's where the feed will be to listen online. We will no longer be hosting the shows on the Euro Pacific Capital website. There will be a link to shiftradio.com. But if you want to listen live, or if you want to listen to the archives, all of the archives, and I am going to transfer all of the archives from Wall Street Unspun off of the Europac site and put them on the shiftradio.com site. So that's where you can listen. If you happen to live in Connecticut, in Fairfield County, or in Westchester County, New York, you can listen on radio, on AM radio. The show will be on two stations simultaneously. WNLK out of Norwalk, which is 1350 on the AM dial, and WSTC out of Stamford, which is 1400 on the AM dial. Those two stations will both be carrying the station, so it'll be heard in Westchester County, New York, maybe even up into Manhattan. It'll be possible. On parts of Long Island, we'll hear it. All over Fairfield County, we'll hear it. We are also talking to other stations about carrying the show. A lot of stations want to see it up and running first. The goal is to get this show on as many stations as possible in as many states as possible. I'm aiming for, you know, nationwide syndication. Hopefully, by the time the 2012 presidential election cycle kicks into high gear, I'll be on a lot of markets. You know, this show is going to be focusing on investments, but on politics and on economics. And I'm hoping to make a much wider impact on the direction that this country is headed in to help educate people, because unfortunately things are going to get very bad, much worse than they are right now in this country over the next several years. And it's important that as many people as possible understand why. Understand it's not a flaw in the capitalist system. It's a flaw in our system of government, of central government planning, of socialism, of central banking. The government is creating this crisis. It is man-made. And it is going to get worse because we are pursuing the wrong policies. We are trying to cure a disease by making the disease worse. And we are preventing the market from curing what the government has infected our economy with. So hopefully this show will do a lot. So this, you know, two weeks from today will be the last Wall Street Unspun, and then the very following Monday. So Wall Street Unspun on a Wednesday, and then the next Monday we start the new show. And the show is called The Peter Schiff Show. And, you know, when I was looking for URLs to host the show, we noticed that as soon as I announced that, somebody went out there and reserved all these URLs around The Peter Schiff Show. So we weren't able to pick that. So somebody listening to this show heard that and decided to be really cute and to reserve Peter Schiff Show. So we ended up going with shiffradio.com, although I mean, I think I kind of like that one better. It's a little bit shorter than The Peter Schiff Show. I actually formed a brand new company to produce the show called Sound Media is my new media company. And the producer of my radio show is the former producer of The Laura Ingraham Show. So he's got a lot of experience in conservative talk, with working with the syndicate. So hopefully this show will do well. I'm hoping to rival guys like Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck. You know, I know Rush Limbaugh is the top of the talk show. It'd be hard to get as popular as he is. Those other guys, I mean, I think I have a shot. So, you know, that's it. And hopefully what you guys can do who are listening, tell your friends to tune in. Anybody who lives in Connecticut in particular, make a point of continuing to tune in. You know, if wherever you happen to live, call up some of the local radio shows there. Hey, you got to get Peter Schiff on the air. Let's get the Peter Schiff Show. One difference is we're going to have real commercials on the two-hour shows. So, you know, that's part of the radio biz. I got to, you know, get advertisers and show them that it's lucrative, because ultimately what's going to enable this show to be syndicated is if advertisers can advertise on my show and make money, because that's what it's all about. People are on the radio because they can keep people's attention long enough to hear the ads. That's how the market works. So, you know, right now there are no ads on Wall Street Unspun. I occasionally throw in a plug for Euro Pacific Capital or the Perth Mint, and we will be hearing advertisements. I will be probably the initial advertiser on the Peter Schiff Show, so there will be advertisements for Euro Pacific Capital, for Euro Pacific Precious Metals. There will be ads on there for my books. But hopefully over time, my ads will not be as prominent, and we'll have more mainstream ads as we demonstrate to the advertisers that I have an audience. And I know I do have an audience out there. Just a question of proving that to the networks, the syndicators, and the advertisers. So anyway, that's it. So let's get on with my second to last, or the third to last Wall Street Unspun, the second to last one that I am hosting. Oh, also just a note on my whereabouts. You know, I will be in New Orleans for the investment conference on October 27th. I'll be down there. If you haven't signed up, it's a great conference, probably my favorite conference to be at. Great speakers in addition to myself, great city, great time. If you haven't been there, you really need to go down there. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about, and it's great to go again and again. So the New Orleans Investment Conference, you can go to my website, look at upcoming news and events on the front page, click on it. You can make a reservation, show up down there. I'll be down there. Some of the other guys, my brother is going to be down there, Andrew Schiff. We'll have a booth. I'm not sure which brokers yet from Europac are going to be down there. But it's good fun, good information. It should be hopping, you know, because they're really famous as the Gold Bug Conference, started by Jim Blanchard. And, of course, today gold hit another in a string of record highs, over $1,300 an ounce. Silver today up strong, another 30-year record high close in the price of silver. Swiss franc today. Intraday hit a new all-time record high. It did manage to close a little bit lower, but hit a new high. The Australian dollar did not hit a new record high, but it hit a new 52-week high today. Dollar index now closing with a 78 handle. Been falling almost every day. It looks very weak to me. Commodity prices continue to be firm. CRB continues its breakout above 280. We're now just about 286. A very strong chart. Finally, a big up day in the crude market today, up about a dollar and a half, just under $78 a barrel. You know, people who come on television who say there's no sign of inflation anywhere, I mean, talk about being blind. Inflation is screaming. And if there wasn't enough signs that inflation is already here, the Federal Reserve has said that they don't think inflation is high enough, and they're going to do whatever they can to make it higher, to make it worse. And it's already pretty bad. So where do we see these price increases, these dollar weaknesses feeding into consumer prices? And, of course, making it worse, you got these guys in Congress rattling their sabers at China for being a currency manipulator, talking about sanctions, talking about a trade war with China. How are we going to fight a war with China when we're disarmed, we're defenseless? They beat us in a war, before it even started. We're not prepared to fight a war. I mean, it'd be the mismatch of the century. But of course, we're not going to go to war with China. It's all political rhetoric. Our leaders are begging the Chinese to prop up our dollar. They know what the source of our phony economy is. This is all for the voters. This is all show. It's all bark, but we're not going to bite. And I'm sure that we've insured the Chinese that it's all talk. Don't worry. We're not going to do anything. And we're not going to do anything. We're not going to bite the hand that feeds us. A drug addict is not going to do anything to hurt his pusher. He's not going to rat out his pusher to the police because he wants the drugs. And that's what's happening with China and the United States. We want the drugs. We want the cheap money. We want the products. We want to be able to sell our bonds. We need the Chinese. Now, long term, we don't need them, just like a drug addict doesn't need the pusher. Long term, he needs to get off the drugs and get rid of the pusher. But that's, but there's a short-term consequence. There's a withdrawal. And we don't want to go through credit withdrawal, consumption withdrawal. We don't want to go through the withdrawal associated with rebuilding a healthy economy. So we need the Chinese pushers to keep supplying us with the drugs, and no matter how much we protest, no matter how much our politicians pretend that China's the bad guy for currency manipulation, that behind the scenes, it's the exact opposite. And in fact, I just worked on a commentary today that's going to go out in the next newsletter that's coming out, I think, by the end of the week. If you don't get the Shift Report newsletter or the Europac newsletter, just make sure you go to our website and sign up, and you get it's a free newsletter. So make sure you get a lot of good information in that newsletter. But I'm talking about this whole idea of a race to the bottom, of competitive devaluations, as if countries become richer by making their citizens poorer. It doesn't work that way. People think, if we have a weak currency, we can get more exports and we can get more jobs. But so what? It's like all you're doing is selling your products for less. Yeah, every store, I can go into any store and say, hey, I know how you can really increase your sales. Have a 50% off sale. Slash your prices. Yeah, they're going to sell more stuff, but they might lose money. The whole idea is not to have to slash prices to sell your merchandise. It's to try to sell it for full price. Or how about this? How about if I was telling somebody who's looking for a job and, they're trying to get a job and they want $40,000 a year. What if I say, hey, why don't you just why don't you just go charge $20,000 a year? Why don't you take a pay cut? Why don't you offer to work for a lot less money? You'll get a lot more work. Yeah, but who cares? You don't want to work for less. You want to work for more. And when a country debases its currency, all that that means is its citizens agree to work for less money, to accept pay cuts. So that's how you get jobs. You get jobs by working for less money. But that's not what we want. We want jobs, but we want to get paid. We want to earn more money. I mean, that's the whole point. So this idea that a country gets an advantage by forcing its citizens to accept pay cuts, by selling it, by putting its merchandise on sale. When you export and you have a weak currency, that means you earn less foreign currency for your exports, which means you can afford to import fewer products based on what you exported. It means you're working more for less. That's a, you know, Dr. Kevorkian economic policy. It's amazing how clueless people are, which is why the Peter Schiff Show is going to be so utterly important. We have got to get the truth out there because this is a very, very dangerous time. Also, I'm just beginning the early stages of my next book, which is going to be a more comprehensive book, not only on explaining what the problems are in this country and how we got into this mess, but a real comprehensive analysis of what government needs to do specifically to turn the situation around. What rules and regulations need to be repealed and why? What government agencies and departments need to be abolished and why and how to do it? And how to restructure the federal government, how the entitlement problem can be handled, how the tax code needs to be reformed. And it's going to get into areas of, you know, the failed war on drugs. It's going to get into civil rights issues, national defense, all sorts of major political issues. I am going to lay out a roadmap of what is wrong and specifically what needs to be done. And hopefully that book will be out, you know, in time for the presidential elections of 2012. And hopefully by then my radio show will be syndicated and popular and heard throughout the country. So anyway, that's what I'm doing now. I got a lot on my plate, and I'm also working on an international brokerage firm to handle foreign clients. And we know we've got Europac Canada that should be opening up shortly, first in Toronto and then in Vancouver. I know the Canadians out there, you guys have been waiting patiently. We're still trying to get final regulatory approval. We are ready to go. The only thing that's keeping the doors closed are the regulators trying to get all their various permissions. I mean, it's no bastion of free market capitalism up there in Canada either. There's a lot of regulation up there. You know, on a relative basis, Canada is in much better shape than the United States, but it's certainly no free market paradise. It's hard to find locations like that. But, you know, when it comes to countries, it's generally choosing among the lesser of all the evils, because so many governments around the world are doing so much harm and so much damage to their economies. And, of course, the irony of it is that the government hurts most those that they intend to help. You know, a perfect example, I announced this on my video blog the other day. Europacific Capital is finally imposing minimum requirements on its customers. We're going to have dollar values to open up brokerage accounts. I am going to have minimum income and net worth requirements of my clients. And it's not because I really want to do that. It's because government regulations are so cumbersome and so expensive. I can't afford the smaller accounts anymore. I lose too much money. They drain too much of my compliance resources. So here you have a situation where the government is making a business that was profitable, unprofitable. And since I'm not a charitable organization, I can't lose money when I open up an account. I mean, what business is going to, you know, be in the business of, you know, taking on a new customer and as a result they lose money? I mean, you can't lose money when you take on business. So the government is destroying what was profitable with regulation. And of course, you know, the real irony of it is, and the sad part is, and it's not just going to be me. I mean, smaller investors are going to have a hard time opening up brokerage accounts with anybody, because more and more firms are just going to refuse to deal with the small investors because the government makes it too risky and too expensive to do that. And so what happens is the small guy has to do it all by himself. He's got to go to a discount broker and make all his own decisions. And so, you know, the government makes it so expensive to deal with the little guy that nobody is willing to do it. No one will take the risk. Nobody wants the exposure. Who knows? It might be so bad that even the discount brokers will refuse to handle. They might even shut down. You never know. The government might make it so the only thing you can do is buy treasuries direct from Uncle Sam, which is probably what they want us to do. And again, before I take your calls, the other thing that the government has made me do, you know, for a year or so, I've wanted to grow my business. I've wanted to hire more brokers and open new offices. And I just haven't really been able to do that because of problems I've had with you know, regulations and everything. And so I'm finally just basically throwing in the towel and I'm opening up a foreign firm. And, you know, instead of, you know, Europeans or Asians sending money to me in America so that I can manage it and help them. I'm going to have them send it to my foreign company. And so revenues and income that would have accrued to an American business are now going to accrue to a foreign business because of regulations. And the jobs that I would have created expanding my brokerage firm here, those jobs are not going to be created. The jobs are going to be created in another country where there aren't as many regulations, where the taxes are lower. And so this is what happens. This is not even an academic. This is what is actually happening at my business. I can see as a real-life example how government regulations and taxes are causing me to make investments and to hire people in other countries when I would rather hire them here. That was my first choice. But I just couldn't do it. So I'm doing it abroad. And there's so many. I mean, all of the outsourcing, all of the work that is being done in other countries that could have been done here is not being done here because of government. That's the reason. And who are the losers? You know, not really the businesses that outsource. Yes, they would prefer not to outsource. It's inconvenient, and they lose something. But ultimately, the biggest losers are the citizens of the country who miss out on the opportunities that are now made available to citizens of other countries. It's the people who lose their jobs or who never get jobs. These are the people that are the most hurt. And, you know, as the government raises taxes on the rich, you know, the rich will not suffer as much as the middle class and the poor from those tax increases, because all it means is that wealthy people will have less wealth to grow the economy and less incentive to make their wealth available to grow the economy. The wealthy will still be wealthy even if you raise their taxes. But the problem is the poor will be poorer. And some of those poor and middle class people who would have been wealthy will never get wealthy because of these problems. Those are the unintended consequences of government. The good doers that like to talk about how much they care, they don't understand how their policies hurt most the people that they pretend to champion. Anyway, on that note, let me go to the phones. We only have four people on hold, which is rare. So the number to call, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let me jump ahead. Let me take the first caller who's calling all the way from London, England. Jan, go ahead. You're on the line.
Hi, Peter. It's Jan calling from London.
Yes. How are you? You're up late.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I stayed up late for the last show. Well, anyway, my question is, I don't have a question about economics. I'm an author myself. But my question was, how can non-Americans help you out in business and in politics when you next run for the Senate or something like that?
Well, certainly non-Americans can open up accounts with me if they want to be a client of mine. But as far as politics, you know, we had people that were out of the country who were making phone calls on my behalf for the campaign. We had several volunteers who came from other countries to work on the campaign. The only thing you can't do is donate your money. You can donate your time. That's perfectly legal. That can be done. And certainly if you know people who are Americans, you can encourage them to donate money. There's nothing wrong with that. So you can help me fundraise. There are a lot of things that you can do. I encourage people to buy my book. You know, some people, you can call up other radio talk shows and mention my name. Ask about me. Ask about, have you read Peter Schiff's book, Crash Proof? Have you read How an Economy Grows and How it Crashes? And, of course, if I was running for office, which right now I'm not, you could have certainly, you know, plugged the election.
Well, I just said I called your office, and I was told that I cannot make any phone calls on your phone banking machine thing.
There were people that did it through Skype. I mean, we didn't actively encourage it, but people ended up doing it, you know. But it's not illegal or anything, but we didn't want to create the appearance that we were trying to encourage foreigners to participate. So we never actively encouraged it, but there were plenty of foreigners who were doing it, you know, on their own.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, and all the best to you, and I'll keep watching you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jan. And I'm glad we have an international audience, and hopefully that will pick up, once we do the live show. And, of course, the sound quality is going to improve. I mean, it is going to be a professional show, professionally produced, with sound effects, intros, more music. I mean, I'm going to have call screeners, which I don't have now. I mean, it is going to be a top-notch real radio show. Next up, Ken in California. Go ahead, Ken. Ken, are you there in California?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have a couple of questions about China's currency practice. And since I'm Chinese, I have a more cynical view about the reason than you do. I know you think that the Chinese government will sooner or later let its currency rise and that the dollar collapse. But do you think it is possible that the Chinese government doesn't want it to happen because the Chinese government doesn't really want its citizens to grow rich and increase its consumption because that's going to weaken the Chinese state, even though its citizens will grow richer because if devaluing its currency, the Chinese state is growing richer and stronger by accumulating a lot of foreign reserves, even though citizens are poor. So once they allow the currency to rise, the fortunes of the Chinese state and its citizens will reverse. Even though the Chinese citizens will grow richer, the Chinese state will weaken because its trade surplus will diminish. And it's going to repeat the mistake that the United States has made in the past.
My thinking would be the Chinese government ultimately gains its power based on, the only people in the world that the Chinese government can tax are Chinese citizens. And you can make a lot more money taxing rich people than taxing poor people. And, the reserves that the Chinese government owns, I mean, it owns them on behalf of its citizens, theoretically. But I think that the Chinese government would have more influence and be more powerful if the Chinese people were a lot richer. And I think it would be more secure. The thing is, the fact that they're not a democracy, I mean, the only thing that really threatens the status quo would be a revolution. And people are more likely to revolt if they're poor than if they're rich. You know, I think that if people are free, if people's lives are improving, see, I don't – being able to vote means nothing to me. The fact that I can vote for the lesser of two evils, which politician is going to oppress me less, I don't – you know, that doesn't do anything for me. I'd rather not be able to vote but not have to pay income taxes. Not have to pay FICA taxes. I'd rather have a benevolent monarch than live in this type of democracy where I'm being, victimized, tyrannized by the majority. So, I think the main reason is you've got a lot of very bold interests in China that benefit from exports to America, just like you have in Japan. I mean, Japan is pursuing the same type of policy as China. It's not as bad, but they're intervening. They're trying to deliberately keep their currency low. They're manipulating because they've got the same political factions, even though they're a democracy and China's not.
Don't you think that if China allows its currency to be the reserve currency, the Chinese yuan will become too strong and the Chinese citizens will consume more than it produces and repeat the mistakes that the United States made?
No, not at all. I mean, we had a strong currency, and we had a trade surplus. We didn't start having a deficit until we developed this big welfare state and we left the gold standard. I mean, that's when it really started. I mean, if the Chinese renminbi is going to become the reserve currency, it's going to be because it's backed by stuff. It's going to have gold reserves. They're going to have real reserves there. And the Chinese are not, going to immediately stop producing and stop exporting. They have a real industrial economy. They're going to produce what they consume. Now, is it possible that generations from now there could be a transformation of the Chinese society similar to ours if they repeat all our mistakes? Sure. But it's not going to happen anytime soon. And they're not going to repeat our mistakes in this generation. It's going to require some time because our mistakes are going to be so bad. I mean, the one consolation that we can take from all this, America is going to suffer so much, right? This economy is going to suffer. It's going to collapse to such an extent that we are going to be a perfect example for everybody to see of what not to do. So we're the sacrificial lambs, right? Things are going to get so bad here that at least the rest of the world will know what not to do. Hopefully, we will completely discredit Keynes and Keynesianism and these ideas for at least a century before people are dumb enough to try it again. Because they'll be, you know, well, look what happened to America. You don't want to go down the road of America. I mean, we are going to be a glaring example of what not to do.
Right. Can I also ask you a question?
Unfortunately, you know, we're the sacrificial lambs in this, but you know, somebody's got to do it.
Right. Can I also ask you a question about the similarities and differences between Japan and China? Japan used to run a huge trade surplus and has a lot of foreign exchange reserves, just like China did. And then after the Japanese real estate bubble popped, Japan entered the lost decade. Do you think the same thing could happen to China after the Chinese real estate bubble popped?
If China continues its these policies, remember, the reason that Japan had a lost decade is because the Japanese didn't let the yen rise, the Japanese didn't let their interest rates rise, and the Japanese didn't let companies fail that should have failed and banks fail. They didn't let the market correct the imbalances. And yes, you know, if China repeats the mistakes of Japan, if they repeat the mistakes of the United States, sure. But I think they're going to learn. I don't think the Chinese are that dumb. I think the Japanese are going to figure it out too, especially as the dollar really begins to collapse and China and Japan start to think about how much more expensive propping up the dollar is going to be. The price tag is going to be so high that it's going to shock them into reality. Anyway, thanks for the call. I don't want to take too much time because we got a lot of people on hold. Next up is Matt from Alabama. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Peter. How you doing? Just want to tell you I'm a happy EuroPac client, and I've seen you mention before about the you shorten the U.S. Treasuries, and I was wondering what the difference was as far as shorting treasuries versus maybe being short on corporate bonds. You know, I've seen Gary North mention before, who's an Austrian economist author, mentioned that, you know, that they could keep interest rates low even on the long treasuries, as they, you know, because they're buying them right now.
Well, the only thing is, it's a lot more difficult to short a corporate bond because, I mean, they don't have a futures contract on corporate bonds. There aren't put options. So, you know, to actually short a corporate bond, I'm not even sure how most people would do that. I mean, you could short the corporation stock, but how to short the bond, I'm not even sure how you'd go about doing that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you guys had access to some ETFs that did that or not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if there's an index that – because in order to short it, I mean, you know, there'd have to be some kind of product because the individual bond is owned by a person. And, you know, I mean, you'd have to go out and borrow that bond, sell it to somebody who wants it. I mean, I don't even know if it's done.
Okay. But theoretically, I mean, you know, it would be.
Or if you could try to short municipal bonds. But I don't know that there's any way, if they have a contract on them or a way to do it. But, you know, I certainly think that I wouldn't buy any of those bonds. I wouldn't buy muni bonds. Or, you know, I mean, the way it looks for most states or most – I think a lot of states are either going to default, in which case you're not going to get your money back, or they're going to pay you based on a government bailout, in which case the money they give you is not going to be worth much because in order for the federal government to bail out the states, they got to print the money. And the problem is the minute the federal government bails out one state, they're going to bail out all the states because how can they bail out New Jersey but not New York? I mean, and then the minute New York gets a bailout, well, New Jersey's got no reason to be responsible because they're just going to say, well, New York got bailed out. Well, hell, why should we cut anything? Why should we cut government salaries? We'll just get a government bailout. So the moral hazard is massive. So there's no way, you know, either they default or they pay you in worthless money, you know.
Yeah, okay. I just didn't know if there was a possibility out there where there were low interest rates in the Treasury area and then, you know, ridiculously high interest rates in the corporate area.
No, they're low everywhere. You know, corporations right now are doing record amounts of borrowing, which is bad for the economy because everybody's borrowing, no one's saving. And, of course, what are the corporations doing with the money they're getting by selling bonds? They're not investing it in new capital. They're not growing the economy. They're just buying back stock. That's all they're doing. They're just leveraging up their balance sheets, you know, and they're doing it because the money is cheap. and it helps their earnings per share so their executives could get a bigger bonus. But how did they grow their earnings? They didn't grow their revenues. They didn't grow their profitability. They just took on more leverage because the Fed made it cheap. Well, you know, we've seen this movie before. Anyway, yeah. But I guess they're hoping that they're going to get bailed out because of inflation, which is probably going to happen. So,
gotcha. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Next up is Joe in New York. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge fan, buddy.
Thank you.
Well, let me just throw this out there. About a year ago, I was in a relationship and going down the line of marriage and looking to have a family, so I took the risk of buying a house. Due to personal reasons, you know, that transcended in my current state. I'm looking for your recommendation, and I'm pretty confident I know what your answer is going to be, but it's always better to hear from the horse's mouth. The current predicament that I'm in now, I put about 20 to 25% down on the house, and I'm considering whether or not to sell it, rent it, or, you know, that would be the two options, I guess, sell it or rent
well,
it.
Well, I mean, can you sell it? I mean, can you get your money out of the property? Or how?
I would have to sell it and absorb a loss. So if I did sell and absorb a loss, I would, I guess, have to rent and pay rent and assume that I could, you know, recuperate some of that loss.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that. I mean, would you? But you would get some money back. It wouldn't be a total loss.
Yeah, I would probably lose between 5% and 10% of the, you know, the 20% to 25% that I put down on the house. That's
right,
you know,
well, that's,
going off of assumptions of appraisals in the area.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a disaster. I mean, you know, it's so that's certainly a viable option. You know, what I would do is what kind of mortgage do you have?
It's just a conventional mortgage.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got a 30-year fix. You got a low rate.
30-year fixed at 4.875%.
Yeah, I mean, so
I've had
people
interested in renting the property, but given the environment and, you know, everything, I'm concerned if that gentleman loses his job. In addition to that, I work for one of the big banks and brokerage firms over in the area.
Well, I understand you don't want to live in a house. You'd rather live in an apartment in the city or something because you're single.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't want to rent it out. If you don't want to live there, I'd try to sell it. I mean, why hassle with a tenant, you know? In a down real estate market. I mean, if you wanted to live there, I was going to say compare your mortgage payments to what the rents would be, you know. But I would try to sell the place just to get, you know, why hassle with it? You know, I mean, you know, you don't want it. You bought it because you thought you were going to get married. You're not married. You don't want to be there. Even if it takes a loss, you know, you get out of there. You know, you live where you want to live. You know, you have a better life, and then you won't have to think about it.
No. Okay.
And then here's what I would do. Take the money that you get out. You're only going to lose 5 or 10%. So just take whatever's left, send it into your Europac account, buy more gold or buy more foreign stocks, and I think you'll make the loss back, you know?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I do want to keep some capital on hand, though, just in case I lose my job. So we'll see.
Yeah, and
for one of those big banks. So.
Well, if we take some of that capital and we buy you dividend-paying stocks, you can use those dividends to help offset the rent on your apartment.
That's not a bad thought. Not a bad thought. We may have to talk to one of your analysts after this. Well, thank you for your time, Peter.
All right, Joe. Take care.
Take care.
Next up is Eddie in Missouri. Go ahead, Eddie.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, good, good. Hey, Peter, you know what? It doesn't appear that the austerity measures in Europe are going over too well. You know, I've been watching a little bit of TV and watching these protests, and I'll bet you there are politicians are basically watching them and basically saying, hey, you know, I don't want to go down that road. You know what I mean? Yeah, I am in complete agreement with you that austerity is what we need. We need to reduce spending. We need to do the right thing. The only thing is that to get elected to political office, I mean, is something that requires a voter to vote for.
Oh, I know that. Well,
therein lies the conundrum, right?
Well, that's what our founding fathers warned us about over 200 years ago. That's why they gave us a republic and not a democracy. They understood that problem. You know, I mean, the politician, it's like, you know, we've got a disease, but the politicians don't want to tell us how sick we are because they know that we've got no stomach for the cure. So it's like we show up with cancer, and their solution is put a Band-Aid on it so we don't see that it's getting worse. But meanwhile, it's getting worse. We're going to die. But they don't want to tell us, well, this is what you got to do because, you know, we don't want to swallow the medicine because it doesn't taste good. So, yes, it's very difficult. I mean, I ran for office, trying to tell the truth. And obviously, I wasn't successful. And the problem is, even the people that get elected, once they get elected, you know, even if they're good people, of course, the minute they get to Washington and it's all about getting reelected. And it's like, well, you can't say that. You can't do this. You'll never get – I mean, you got to play ball. You know, and it's just a very corrupt system the way it works. And remember, voting is all about appealing to the masses, the lowest common denominator. I mean, you know, when I'm a stockbroker and I'm an investment advisor, and I know that the vast majority of people out there, even investors who have money, who are supposedly probably more intelligent than people who don't have money because they earned it and they have it, investable capital, I know that I'm not even going to convince the majority of investors to send me their money. They're going to listen to what I'm saying, and it's going to fly over their head. They're not going to understand it. But I can appeal to enough people to run a viable business. To get elected, you got to get it. You got to get 51% of the people. You've got to appeal to the lowest common uneducated. You got to appeal to people who were educated in government schools, who have been brainwashed from day one. I mean, how hard is it for somebody like me to be able to win the votes of the vast majority of American citizens?
I get it. I need to get your opinion on this, Peter. Okay, I think, and you let me know if this is too sarcastic or too cynical, I think that Obama is intentionally trying to run us into the ground. The more people that basically fall into unemployment and become more desperate or less wealthy, the more power government has. I turn into an Obama supporter when I can't find a job anywhere doing anything.
What Roosevelt, when he created Social Security, I mean, he basically let somebody try to take this away, you know, knowing that the government wants to create dependency, because then the dependent will vote for government.
Correct.
And now, yeah, I mean, is Barack Obama smart enough to have figured that out? I don't know. But I know that the Democrats, you know, want dependent voters. You know, as Harry Brown used to say, the government is an expert at crippling you and then handing you a crutch and saying, you see, without me, you couldn't walk. And that's what the government wants, a nation of cripples, so the government can hand out the crutch. You know, and, you know, yes, you know, the more people who depend on government, the more power government will have and the easier it is to grow. Now, I think it's more a comedy of errors. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they're well-intentioned. They're just stupid.
Why won't they listen to Ron Paul? Why won't they listen to Ron Paul?
Well, as I say, I know. Well, they're going to say, why should they listen to Ron Paul? Yeah, I mean, why don't they listen to me? Look at all the things that I said that happened. I mean, go back and read Crash Proof, right? And say, okay, this guy, he totally understood it. That book is out there. You know, I mean, people in Washington have seen that book, right? They said, okay, here's a guy that totally understood the problem, that saw it before anybody else. He nailed it completely. Let's give this guy a call. Let's bring him to Washington. Let's pick his brain. You think I've never gotten a call like that. You think anybody gives a damn? They're not looking for solutions for the country. They're looking for political solutions for themselves. And what I'm saying and what Ron Paul is saying doesn't solve their problem, right? Their problem is getting reelected. The country's problem is getting rid of those guys, getting them out of office.
Yep, I agree. Hey, if you have a question, if you have a second to comment on how quickly the dollar could basically fall apart. It closed today at 78.75, or actually it is at that level currently. If you could just give me your thoughts, I'll take your
comments. Yeah, I mean, my guess on like the free fall area for the dollar is when it breaks below 70. I think there's still – it's going to be a slow decline. I think the dollar – my guess, and this is only a guess looking at the chart, I think the dollar index is going to work its way down to 75. Maybe even before the end of October. I think we'll get a little bounce from the 75 level, and then I think by towards the end of the year, early next year, we'll move down to the 70 level. And I think if we can decisively break below 70, and if that happens, where oil is breaking out above $100 a barrel, You know, gold is who knows where. And if the bond market really starts to come down at the same time, then you can really start to see a more aggressive move out of the dollar, a more widespread move that could take the dollar down more precipitously. And that will be followed by exchange controls imposed by the U.S. government, which will restrict and eventually eliminate the ability of American citizens to get rid of dollars by making it harder or more difficult to buy, you know, foreign currencies, whether it's the Swiss franc or the Australian dollar or maybe precious metals. And when does that come in? I don't know. Maybe not before the 2012 elections, but those types of controls could certainly come in the four-year administration of whoever wins, whether it's Obama or, you know. Now, if we got Ron Paul or somebody like him becoming president, then there's no chance that those exchange controls would override his veto. So that's certainly a reason to try to get somebody like that, like a Ron Paul, in the White House.
Okay. Hey, I'm waiting for your new book, Peter, and thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Next up it's Daniel in Indiana. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for accepting my call, Peter.
Really quick, let me stop you. After Daniel, I've got three people on hold, so let's no new calls. I'll just do Daniel and then the last three callers. Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay. I am starting a iPhone application business, and so there's a chance that I could get possibly be paid in foreign currency. And I was just thinking, you know, if somebody's willing to pay me in pounds or euros or yuan, that I would rather just keep that rather than get it converted into dollars. So how would one go about keeping foreign currency in a bank without having to convert it to U.S. dollars?
Well, you're going to have a banking relationship that will accept wires of foreign currencies. And then the other thing is going to be it's going to complicate your taxes a little bit, because you're earning revenues in foreign currencies, but you know you're going to be taxed based on what the dollar value of those currencies are. So it's going to complicate your tax record keeping a little bit to try to figure out, you know, what your income is and how to pay taxes on it. But I mean, it certainly makes it easier for you if your customers are international to accept payments in various currencies. The question is, are you going to, if somebody pays you in euros, are you going to leave the euros in your account, or are you going to clean them up and turn them into dollars as you get them so that you can, you know, have a better accounting of your profits so that you can pay your taxes? You can certainly, after you finish doing that, you can certainly take your profits and convert them back into the currencies that you want. But from a business perspective, yeah, it makes it easy. If you've got global currency customers, you certainly want to be able to collect revenues in whatever currency your customers happen to have. But I understand where you're trying to get at. I mean, as the dollar, you know, you can price things. If you can price things in euros and then people are, you know, having to pay, you know, you won't have to constantly raise your prices as the dollar loses value.
Mm-hmm. And I had one other question. Oh. Real quickly, how would I go about setting up these accounts? Because I've had no luck on doing research on my own.
Well, that I don't know. I mean, you'd have to, you know, I mean, contact some of the banks and, you know, just see what you can do. And,
just contact
there are
banks
companies.
Directly.
There are companies online probably that process credit card orders and debit cards in various currencies. But
okay.
Anyway, I wish you luck in the business, and thanks for calling.
Do you mind if I ask one quick question?
Go ahead.
I belong to an organization called Young Americans for Liberty, and we're looking for guest speakers. I was just wondering what it would take to get you to speak at, say, a college campus.
Yeah, it's to contact my office. It's tough, you know, because it's, you know, there's a lot of people that want me to come, and it's, you know, it's, I can't always come to them. But, you know, contact me, Europac, you know, talk to Mike Finger at Europe Pacific Capital, and, you know, pitch your case, and, you know, we'll see what we can do.
Okay, thank you very
All
much.
Right. Thanks, Dan. Next up is Robert in California.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Quick question for you. I'm interested in trying to purchase some stocks in Australia, and I'm curious what avenues I might have available to me to do that. I was able to purchase some Canadian stocks through my Scottrade account, but I don't believe they have the ability to purchase stocks in Australia.
Yeah, well, I mean, we do. I mean, so depending on the size of the account that you want to open, I mean, you can certainly call up us, Euro Pacific Capital. We buy stocks in Australia every day. So
right. I spoke with one of your brokers this morning, or actually this afternoon, and he said, I guess you had two different limits, minimum limits, and like one limit I could purchase mutual funds, but then I'd have to go up to a higher account value.
Yeah, that's what we're just implementing now, right? I mean, how much did you want to get started with?
You know, not that much, I guess. You know, probably not.
Yeah,
more
see,
than
that's the problem. How much?
Probably not more than $50,000.
Well, I mean, $50,000 is enough. You can still purchase individual stocks if they're unsolicited. See, we won't recommend them to you. We're going to recommend funds and ETFs. But you can still, if you know the stock that you want to buy, you can buy it on an unsolicited basis. So yeah,
And then that it would just be required the lower minimum value then.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you have the minimum to open up an account, you can buy stocks as long as you know they're unsolicited. We'll execute the orders for you.
Oh, okay. I thought that I had to have that higher minimum in order to.
No, in fact, I just put the rules in, so I'll clarify it with the brokers so they know that the minimum levels are for us to give you recommendations. The regulators put a different standard on us if we recommend something to somebody versus if it's bought on an unsolicited basis. So the requirements are a little different if you're simply calling us up and saying, here's the stock I want to buy. Please buy it for me. That's different from us telling you, here's a stock we want you to buy or we think you should buy, and then telling you about it, and then you say, okay, buy me that stock. You know, there are different rules and regulations that apply and different exposures and liabilities that we have. So if we're making a recommendation, it's a different circumstance than if we're just executing an order that is on an unsolicited basis.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Next up is George in Minnesota.
Peter.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Hello?
Yeah, am I losing you? I'm on a cell phone.
No, go ahead.
Okay. This is sort of a mathematical question. I've been looking at some of the debt-driven monetary collapses over the last, you know, century. And I took a look at Weimar, of course, and I took a look at Zimbabwe and a couple of other ones. And it struck me that possibly these things are exponential in nature, sort of like compound interest. Huh. If you notice on an exponential curve, as you go out on the curve, depending on what the rate is, you reach a point where that thing goes vertical.
Uh-huh.
So I looked at Weimar, and I looked at 1922 and 1923, and boy, it sure looked like that. And I don't know how many other of these types of things occur in the same way, but what I thought was, geez, I'll bet no one in Germany in 1922 had any idea that by November of 1923, their money would be worthless.
Nope, no idea whatsoever. You're right. I mean, once it gets to that terminal once it gets to that terminal stage, it's all about confidence, you know, and velocity. And, you know, it's going to come out of nowhere. You know, that's why you have to be prepared for these things in advance. Because if you wait too long, you can miss the whole opportunity. You know, it's either you get out of the dollar early or you don't get out at all. That's the way I look at it. And if you don't get out at all, you're stuck.
I follow that. I just thought that it was curious, and I wondered if anybody ever done any mathematics.
Yeah, they have. I've seen stuff on it.
I'm not a professional mathematician.
Yeah.
But,
I've seen articles on it. But anyway, thanks for the call. We've only got about 5 minutes left, and I want to get to the last caller.
All right.
Thanks, George. Thank you. Next up, last caller of the evening, Edward in Illinois.
Hi, Peter?
Yes.
Hi, this is an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I'm a huge fan. I'm a client. I'm going to be real quick because I know your time is valuable. The first question is, though, these account limits that you've established, what are those now in dollar amounts and, you know, the limits that you're establishing?
They're not very high. It's $25,000 to have an account. That's the minimum for an account. We used to have accounts $5,000 or $10,000, but I have to eliminate the small accounts because – we got to cut down on the compliance overhead and the paperwork.
Yeah, I totally
it's a nightmare.
Get that.
Yeah,
I totally get so much. My next question is a little more simple, I guess. I'm sitting on a bunch of money in a typical American portfolio as well, you know, the balanced mutual funds, whatever, and I'm wondering if this is the time to just cut the whole thing over and put it all with your guys. You know, is it time to get out of the U.S. market completely?
Well, I've been out of it almost completely for the last decade, personally. The only U.S. stocks I've owned have been mining stocks or oil stocks, and so I don't really look at that as being in the U.S. because these are, you know, kind of global commodity plays. But I haven't had any stocks in my own portfolio that I thought were exposed to the U.S. economy. And I think the U.S. economy, you know, is the Titanic of economies. I think it's just going to get much worse, and they're going to destroy the dollar. The government's going to destroy the economy with regulations and taxes and spending and mandates. And I don't want any of it right now, you know?
Yeah, I'm just about ready to, you know, to make the move, but I keep reading all the stuff that China's going to collapse, the real estate in China. So I'm just on the edge of, you know, cutting that money over and sending it over to your guys. But you know, I'm just on the edge of that. So I'm still trying to, you know, get myself the guts to just to finish it off and do it. Yeah. Yeah, but I love your company. You guys have been great to me. I love your books. You know, good luck to you. I hope you run for office again.
Yeah, well, appreciate that. Appreciate that. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we've only got a few minutes left, so thanks, everybody, again, for the third-to-last episode of Wall Street Unspun. Don't forget to tune in next week to listen to Michael Pinto. That'll be an interesting hour. And then the following Wednesday, the last episode of Wall Street Unspun, a little bit of nostalgia. You know, I don't know if I'll do anything special, but at least it'll be interesting for people to be able to listen to the last one. In fact, for kicks, you know, if you want, go to the archives on Euro-Pacific Capital and go to and find the very first Wall Street Unspun and take a listen and listen to what I was saying way back then. And take a look at all that's happened in the 5.5 to 6 years since I did the very first episode. Anyway, don't forget, if you want to open up an account, remember, foreign investing, very risky. Foreign stocks can go down. Foreign currencies can go down. I can be a complete nut. All my advice could be wrong. Everything I know about economics could be wrong. So be careful before you invest. Do your homework. Understand the risks. Call the brokers. 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Talk to one of my brokers. Find out if foreign investing, precious metals investing is suitable for you. Buy Crash Proof 2.0, the little book of bull moves and how an economy grows and why it crashes. If you've already bought it, buy another copy. Give it to your friends. We got to get those books out there. Anyway, take care again. This has been Peter Schiff for Wall Street Unspun, Midweek Market Outlook. Take care.